The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, Bob Engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to Buckmaster on Friday the 13th, 2019. Hey, you can't beat it. Friday the 13th and a harvest moon. Boy, all the makings for Fright Night tonight, right? We are live weekdays on the Buckmaster Show on 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted local news talk. Our media partner is TucsonSentinel.com, and I've got the man himself here in studio, Dylan Smith. Dylan, thank you over the years for your participation.
Well, thank you for letting me come on and hijack your show every once in a while.
Yes, indeed. The Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, that's Dan Shear. We thank Dan. The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business and the Tucson Weekly. Our Friday Focus interview today, Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry. Mr. Huckleberry, thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here, Bill.
Joining me in studio for our conversation with Mr. Huckleberry, Joe Ferguson is here, political writer for the Arizona Daily Star. Joe, how are you? How's your week so far?
I'm well. It's been busy.
I bet. Dylan Smith, who we heard a few moments ago, Dylan, editor and publisher of the online news service TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan is the immediate past chairman of Local Independent Online News Publishers. The acronym is Lion Publishers. He's also vice president of the Arizona Press Club. Mr. Huckleberry, let's begin with something that affects all Pima County property owners, myself included. Got my my property tax bill in the mail this week or so. Generally, are they pretty much neutral? I know mine was.
They're pretty
neutral
much
neutral from last year.
It depends a lot on your assessed value. And so if your assessed value has been pretty stable, your tax bill is going to be about the same, plus or minus a little bit. You got to remember the county's only four taxing jurisdictions of 94 of them.
Did you say 94?
94, 92, can't remember the latest numbers, but you think of all the school districts, fire districts, special districts, you basically, and you have a potential to have 94 different taxing districts. The county controls about four of those tax levies, primary property tax, the library, flood control, and our debt service tax.
But comparing Pima County to other Arizona jurisdictions, apples and oranges? When people say we're the highest property tax county in the state.
And what people forget is that we're the only county in Arizona that does not have a sales tax. Other counties, all other counties have a sales tax, even Maricopa County, to offset the operation of their jail. Some counties have as many as 3 half-cent sales taxes to supplement their budget. We're the only county in Arizona that has none.
Joe Ferguson, go ahead.
So what would a half-cent sales tax for the county generate in terms of revenue?
It would generate about $80 million a year, and if applied solely to tax reduction, it would reduce our primary property tax rate about a dollar, or really about a third of what it is today.
So Pima County itself doesn't collect a sales tax, but we do have a county-wide sales tax with the Regional Transportation Authority.
Yes, you do.
Doesn't that sort of compare to what goes on in, say, Maricopa County?
Well, Maricopa's got a regional sales tax, just like we do countywide. But in Maricopa County, they also have a region-wide jail tax. And that jail tax goes and generates about $180 million a year. They use to offset the cost of their jail. Our jail that cost about $80 million a year to operate is paid solely by property tax.
The other thing we hear quite often when the subject of county sales tax and property tax comes up is that to keep picking on Maricopa County, so many people in Maricopa County live in incorporated areas, and those jurisdictions have their own property taxes, quite often sales taxes. So as Bill was saying, isn't it a little hard to directly compare one county to another without taking into account Your entire tax bill?
If you took total taxes paid by residents, whether it be a school district tax, a county tax, a city tax, property sales, Pima County ranks right in the middle of basically all the tax
across
burdens
Arizona.
Across Arizona.
Okay.
And so, you know, yes, we have a high property tax, but the reason we have a high property tax is because we don't have any of the other tools that other counties have to reduce their property.
One thing Pima County does not have is a police commission, which is usually in place for a jurisdiction or community the size of Pima County. Is it a bit unusual not to have that that Pima County? Why did Pima County not go with a police commission, Chuck Huckleberry? What's the history of that?
Well, probably because the sheriff, the chief law enforcement officer of the county, is actually an elected official, unlike a city police chief who is appointed by typically a mayor and council or a city manager. And so you have an independent elected official. And in Arizona, the way the Constitution is structured, that particular law enforcement individual reports only to the people. And therefore, a commissioner would be, or a commission would be somewhat redundant and probably not effective. What's being proposed and what's being talked about, and I think give our sheriff some credit, he has no problem discussing the philosophy of policing with anyone who's interested generally. And I think he takes criticism as well as anyone else. And we're now talking about replacing a committee or a commission that's completely ineffective with one that can basically provide input to the sheriff, and the sheriff can then basically take into consideration and decide whether what's good and what's bad. So it's not as if they can tell him what to do or they can direct his activities, but he can at least take input.
Joe Ferguson.
Why is the committee ineffective now? I mean, it was formed by politicians. Was it destroyed by politicians?
Effectively, yes. One member chose not to appoint any members. Another member chose to direct their commission members not to attend. And therefore, when you have a public body, a publicly appointed body that can never get a quorum, it means they can never do any business.
Aren't there plenty of other members on that commission that don't attend meetings as well?
And there probably are. And so I think what happens is when you find that you're never going to have a quorum, the attendance drops off rather dramatically because some people just simply don't want to waste their time.
And what is the name of that committee we're talking about right now?
Community Law Enforcement Partnership Commission or Committee.
Uh-huh.
CLEPSI.
CLEPSI.
Sounds a little bit like a health department issue.
So this
I was going to say social disease myself.
CLEPSI would be dissolved, and then this other group.
Yes, CLEPSI would be dissolved, and okay. this other group would take its place. And really, how do you mix the policy here? Well, if you think the board members are elected by district, which mm-hmm. represents all the population of Pima County, and if they each appoint two members, and you get 10 members to talk to the sheriff about his policing strategies and policy, that's probably a pretty good way to get some community input into law enforcement activities of the sheriff.
But it would be strictly advisory?
It is strictly advisory because you cannot trump the Constitution.
So the current commission, CLEPSI, was tasked just to review grants that were going to the sheriff's department. Is that correct?
Yes. The very first concept was to basically review Operation Stone Garden, which was the whole federal grant dealing with immigration enforcement or enforcement activities. They then morphed into reviewing all grants. And frankly, they don't have the degree of expertise in some cases to understand the grant and the grant complexity of law enforcement.
But wouldn't this replacement proposal even broaden their purview and get them into more things that maybe they're not good at?
It broadens their purview, but you have to remember that they cannot discuss any particular item of business that will come back before the board, because if they do, that's a violation of the open meeting law. So therefore, they really have to restrict themselves to high-level policy discussions regarding policing. And frankly, that's what, you know, a lot of citizen commissions are really for. They're there for the high-level policy discussion.
I want to bring something up that Joe Ferguson wrote about in the Arizona Daily Star today in this new push to ban gun sales at the Pima County Fairgrounds. Explain to our listeners, Chuck Huckleberry, the relationship of the supervisors to the South, is it the Southwestern Fair Commission, which oversees?
Yes.
Okay, what is the relationship? In other words, if the board wanted to outlaw gun sales at the fairgrounds, could the board do that?
No.
No.
And primarily because the board can only do what the state legislature allows them to do, which means that we're not a charter county, therefore we're a political subdivision of the state. And the state has said explicitly the county can do nothing to regulate firearms, sale of guns, or regulation of firearms. Therefore, we're expressly prohibited from doing that. The Southwestern Fair Commission is a nonprofit that basically is appointed by the board to operate the fairgrounds. And they do so, and the fairgrounds are on county property. It's property owned by the county. So when you basically boil it all down, that nonprofit cannot do what the county is unable to do as well. And so that nonprofit fair commission cannot ban the sale of firearms on county property.
Joe, so what's going on here with this ex-Tucson councilwoman, former mayoral candidate, Molly McCassin? Why does she think she's going to be successful in banning the gun shows?
I think we're quibbling over words. I think the ban is what she wants, but I think she's asking the Fair Commission not to schedule any more shows. And so from that, it's an effective solution for her because she doesn't want to see any more gun shows here in town because of the loophole until the loophole's fixed in terms of private sales.
But if the gun people would like to have the shows there, the commission could say no? Or
well, I guess the commission could say no. Then the point would be, what's the reasoning, and is it an implied ban that is beyond their authority that then gets litigated? And in most cases, we lose those litigations.
All right, let's take our break right here. Chuck Huckleberry is with us, Pima County Administrator. 790-2040. If you have a question or comment for Mr. Huckleberry, he would be delighted to hear from you. Joe Ferguson is here from The Star, and Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. It's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news talk. Be right back on Buckmaster. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Chuck Huckleberry, Pima County Administrator, with us in studio. Also with us around the table today, Joe Ferguson, who writes primarily about politics for the Arizona Daily Star, and Dylan Smith, the editor and publisher of TucsonSentinel.com, Tucson's online news service. Before we talk about raising the tobacco age to 21 in Pima County, I want to address Rosemont. This is the first time we've had you in studio in a while, Mr. Huckleberry. And Judge Soto has come down with what many are saying is perhaps the most important mining decision in decades, with his decision about Rosemont. In many ways, did his decision justify what you and the board have been talking about for years?
We hate to say we told you so, but we did. So we had written the Forest Service back in 2006 and questioned the validity of the mining claims, the non-patented mining claims they were using to build a mine, and suggested that they do a validity analysis way back in 2006. Well, that fell on deaf ears, and we then got a couple new forest supervisors. Then again in 2011, we made the same suggestion because the same Forest Service had done a validity analysis on the marble mine that's just across the ridge. And so we felt that those claims needed to be made valid in order to justify their mining use. And so we were pretty much ignored for now close to probably 10 to 15 years. And the very thing that we thought was the flaw.
What was the heart of that? What was the flaw? What was the heart of it?
The heart of it was
water?
Is that their mining claims, their unpatented mining claims, needed to be validated. Because to be valid, they have to show there's a recoverable mineral in order to have valid claims. So the mining company basically said, we're going to use this area because we have unpatented claims, but we're not going to recover any minerals. So by their own admission, they were admitting that the claims were marginal, or if you could take it one step further, invalid.
And so this was the area where they're planning to dump the mining tailings, not mine on that.
That's correct. Yeah. And so that was one of their fundamental assumptions in the mine plan of operations. So if a fundamental assumption is flawed, then the entire operation is flawed. So they got to go back, start at square one, assuming that this decision is going to be appealed. My guess is at least in the Ninth Circuit, it probably will be affirmed, and then the next step is whether it gets appealed to the Supreme Court and what happens next. I think one of the huge problems with the 1872 mining law is that basically we're exporting our wealth for, you know, no extraction. No, there's no extraction tax. There's no tax on metals. And so, therefore, anyone, and that's why you see a predominant number of, in the case of Rosemont and their previous company and now their successor, they're a non-United States company coming in and taking wealth out of the nation and not paying anything for it. And that's a problem. I think in the 1872 Mining Act, that wasn't envisioned.
So isn't another sort of, I told you so, the fact that looking back a ways, Pima County could have bought this land and taken it off the market and turned it into open space for probably a good deal less money than has been spent on it fighting this mine?
probably around $11 million, if I recall. Yes, very shortly after the 2004 bond issue was approved, a private property owner who happened to have connections to Diamond Ventures came to us and said, I was able to purchase this property and I paid something for it, but I'll sell it to the county for, I think, $11 or $12 million. And we said, that's a great idea. But we have these processes established that basically says that it's again, a citizen review process. In this case, the Conservation Acquisition Commission had to take it to them, then had to take it to a bond advisory committee, and then to have a board of supervisors approval. So it had three levels of approval. The unfortunate part is I recommended it, and I think the record can show that fairly directly.
And that was in what year?
That was probably in about 2005 or six.
Did it make it all the way to the board?
It did not. And it got stopped at the Conservation Acquisition Commission because, and to give them, you know, hindsight is always great, but they said, well, we just have this bond issue approved. It was based on promising the voters X, Y, and Z. And here we are shortly after the bond issue is approved going in and changing that. So, you know, I can understand their trepidation in doing so, but it was one of the things that we felt was pretty significant in the sense we could potentially take this issue off the table. And I can remember some of the Conservation Acquisition Commission members saying, well, I know that site, I know that mine, it'll never be mined.
So how much has the county put into trying to battle against this mine over these many years?
It's hard to say because there's no direct expenses other than probably a few legal expenses, but those are in the tens of thousands of dollars or not much. It's a lot of staff time.
Time and attention.
That we've had to pay attention to it, yeah.
I'm more curious to know who was on that commission back then.
Yeah, could you tell us a few names that maybe we'd recognize?
Well, a few
names.
Priscilla Robinson was on that commission there, and I think we can probably get those names. But I mean, that's not relevant. What's relevant is it didn't happen. We recommended it, and there were valid reasons the commission basically said no. And I think probably the most important reason was they felt that if we changed the program all of a sudden because of this coming into play, we'd be criticized because we were doing something different than what we told the voters we were going to do.
And that money did get spent on other open space around the county.
It did. And it you know, basically bought us 30 years of credit in the Section 10 Endangered Species Act permit that we have today. So it was all well spent, but it could have short-circuited a lot of aggravation that the community has gone through and probably will continue to go through over Rosemont.
All right, Joe Ferguson, why don't you introduce what's going to be happening at the board on Tuesday?
Well, we're all hoping for a vote on whether or not to raise the rate, the age to 21 for tobacco purchases, and included in that is vaping.
And I just today signed the memorandum transmitting our recommendation to the board, which is to approve it. And we went back and have retooled the program. I think the board had a number of concerns. One was that we were basically threatening the livelihood of some of the sellers because we were suspending their licenses for certain periods of time if they violated it. Well, right now, it now turned into only a monetary fine for the first three violations, and the fourth violation, the permit is revoked. And what that means is if you're going to have four violations in a short period of time, it means you've got little respect for the ordinance or the law. And it then also penalizes the seller, meaning the clerk who's selling the product. The first time, nothing. The second time, it's a monetary fine, but it's structured about 10% of what the retail established fine is. And I think the other thing is people said, well, what about the buyer? You know, you're not punishing the buyer. And so our punishment to the buyer, which is basically somebody under the age of 21, is
go someplace else. That's the punishment, right? Well, if you want tobacco products.
Well, we're going to make them attend a tobacco cessation class.
Okay.
So, you know, whether they'll attend or not is a whole nother story, but it's it's a penalty. So, you know, you've got to go sit and listen. It's like going to traffic school.
Oh, boy.
So which establishments, which retailers would this apply to? Everywhere in the county or everywhere that's not in a city, everywhere that's not in a town? Who gets covered?
Right now, it's everybody in the unincorporated area that we cover. And by intergovernmental agreement with the city of Tucson, probably all the establishments in the city of Tucson. Then it would be obviously up to the other jurisdictions to join in.
So not inside the towns, not inside the city of South Tucson.
Correct.
Certainly not on the reservations.
Correct. Correct. Hmm. And, you know, and I think it's been pointed out, and people say, well, kids can get access to tobacco products anyway. And that's true, but that's not the point. The point is we ought to make it as difficult as possible for kids to get their hands on products that basically are harmful to them, addictive, and will cause health problems in the future. Health problems not only to themselves, but to society, because who pays those medical bills?
And the vaping piece of all of this?
The vaping piece is pretty new and interesting. In fact, it's one of those things, the canary in the coal mine bell that keeps ringing. You know, we had included vaping in this discussion because vaping has some tobacco, you know, ingredients embedded in it. And we now begin to continue to read about the deaths on vaping and the lung diseases that are basically mysteriously occurring. And so that's another reason to basically stress that to the extent that we can also curb underage or vaping by kids in high school, we need to do as much as we can to do that.
And now the national legislation. We've heard
policy expressed by the White House to basically ban flavored tobacco vaping.
Which is pretty much all of them.
Yeah, and that's fine with us because, again, vaping and tobacco was viewed as the more healthy alternative to smoking. And that may not prove to be correct.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yeah.
I just want to ask a kind of a follow-up on how the Pima County's total ban on smoking on county property is going. How many people are both citizens and employees are you catching trying to sneak one in a stairwell or something?
Frankly, we've had pretty much complete
compliance.
I think people now learn. You know, it's a good thing that the county has those shaded verandas around our buildings because the employees will walk to the edge of the veranda, which is right about the public right-of-way line, and smoke and throw their cigarette butts over the side. So we have, I would say, what I would view as pretty good compliance.
Joe, you had a question.
Sorry, Joe.
I just wanted to get a sense of how much this is going to cost the county in lost revenue. Do you have an estimate?
Not really. I mean, what we are really talking about is the taxes associated with the sale of tobacco products, and it's probably pretty small when it comes to the age groups we're trying to target. But I think the offsetting issue is, again, the cost that basically are in the long run dealing with addiction and with health problems associated with tobacco use.
Well, doesn't that long-term impact tax collection? You know, the kids today are smoking less. They may be vaping, you know, a little bit. But as that, people who don't start smoking when they're teenagers don't really pick it up when they're in their 30s. So as this goes forward a decade, doesn't that really start to impact tax collection overall?
Well, you got to remember, we don't have a sales tax, so...
Just the county, but everybody else who gets, you know, the state
and the state sales tax and tobacco taxes, it affects it. But again, it's kind of one of those things that I think we could do without and would find a substitute form of tax or revenue its place.
Will the city join in doing their own kind of ban?
I think they will. I mean, we've had some indications in our discussions with the city and the city staff is that they're prepared to basically mirror whatever the county adopts so that it's uniform. And then it's enforced by our county health.
One thing that has not come up in our discussion today is an update on the situation with migrants using a portion of the juvenile detention center, a center that in some areas was really underutilized. So what's going on over there? How is the transition from the old Benedictine monastery over on Country Club going to the county facility?
It's done well. They're completely operational, self-contained, and are operating. They probably, my guess is effective starting their operation on September the 6th. They haven't actually operated a full month yet. And my guess is we've already processed 1,500 to 2,000 migrants through the facility. And they're there about 24 to 48 hours, basically making travel arrangements to go to their final destination, getting food and shelter and security, and it's being operated by Catholic Community Services, and they're doing a good job. You know, it's like everything when you start up, you have your hiccups. One of the hiccups was were steaming some kind of something to eat and set off the fire alarm that emptied the whole building.
Oh, boy.
So it's little things like that, but that's only happened once. And so so the facility looks today like a college dorm room. It does not look like a juvenile detention facility. And that facility they're in now had not been used for juvenile detention for over 10 years.
Are you kidding?
So
10
it's
years?
Set vacant, correct.
Uh-huh. So what about the other portion of the facility? Is that where the juveniles are being housed?
Yes. It basically had, they call them pods, and so it had eight pods. And so three of these pods had been turned into the asylum seeker shelter, and the other five pods are still used for detention. My guess is only about two of those five are active in detention, with the other being used for a library or an infirmary or something else.
Hmm. So, Dylan, real quickly.
I'll try and make this one quick. It seems like Regina Romero will be the likely winner of this mayoral election. Certainly, we still have to have the election, but I think she's got a leg up on this. At many times in the past, there's been some good deal of tension between the city of Tucson and Pima County. That's abated somewhat recently. How would you forecast those relationships continuing? I guess Regina used to work for you way back in the day, right?
Yes, way back in the area of housing and community services. And I think the relationships will be fine. You know, again, most of my interaction is with the city manager, Mike Ortega, and we do fine. And I think our position is we're going to do whatever we can to make sure that the residents of Pima County, and that's both City of Tucson residents and anywhere else, are receiving the most efficient services, the least cost, and in the best manner possible. So my view is we're going to do just fine, and if we don't, we'll work on fixing it.
Because there are some joint areas where you work with Mr. Ortega, right?
There's a lot of joint areas. You know, we run a regional library system, and that's all basically urban. So we took that system from the city in 2006, and it's basically a model program. So there's many things that can be done to basically make the operation of government, whether it be the city or the county, more effective and more efficient by working together.
All right, Mr. Huckleberry, thank you very much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Chuck Huckleberry, our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show, coming up now on 12:39. Joe Ferguson and Dylan Smith will stick around for a few more minutes. Got some things I would like to chat with them about, and that's coming up after we take the break right now on Buckmaster.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
This is Moa Mosgallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com. Or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's the roundtable portion of our hour on Friday. Dylan Smith here, editor, publisher, founder of TucsonSentinel.com, which I believe will be celebrating in 2020 its 10th anniversary. Is that correct?
That will be our 10th birthday coming up in January, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay, pat myself on the back. Joe Ferguson is here, who writes primarily for the Arizona Daily Star about politics. And Joe, I was one of the items in your, there were three principal items in your column today, the political notebook, I think we covered pretty well with Mr. Huckleberry, because I was curious, about this push to ban gun sales at the Pima County Fairgrounds. Just from our conversation, doesn't sound like that's going to happen.
No, I get the sense it's not.
Yeah. All right. Well, the other item, a new political action group has been formed to defeat the sanctuary cities measure. Who is spearheading that?
So congressional candidate named Joe Margin is now the chair of it. He has some other well-known Republican allies that are the face of this grassroots organization. So right now we know they've got a press release and a website. We'll see how much power and team they have behind them. So,
is this Citizens for a Safe and Prosperous Tucson?
I forgot the name for a moment, but yes.
There you go. Dylan, your thoughts on that?
What did it take, about 10 minutes for Morgan's opponent in that congressional primary to put out a press release totally ripping apart his effort? Brandon Martin is one of the other Republicans who wants to be the CD2 nominee, and he was highly critical of Morgan's efforts.
So I think that he's going to be highly critical of any of his efforts as a political rival. So,
yeah.
I mean, right now what we know about this new group is that they have a website and they're going to have some yard signs probably.
Is there another group perhaps being formed?
I believe there is. And mm-hmm. So I've had some talks with some people about what that looks like. And so I'm expecting another group to come in that will be well funded.
And Bill, are we going to see some funding on the pro side?
They had T-shirt sales, Dylan. I don't know what you're talking about.
The people who got this on the ballot and are pushing it have run a fairly low budget effort thus far.
They're sitting on...
They don't have TV commercial money yet.
No, they don't. But, I mean, they're sitting on, last time I checked, somewhere in the neighborhood of $14,000. That can buy you a lot of yard signs at the end of the day. I think that...
Yard signs.
I mean... That's what we're talking about now. They've got, you know, full three people that are knocking on doors and making phone calls. So they've got a full staff on it. So will we see a TV ads? I haven't seen a TV ad for a municipal race in 5 years.
Dylan, on Facebook, you were chuckling about, was it Sam Nagy was out on a street corner? Sam is the Republican candidate in Ward 1 who will be on the ballot.
He earned himself a spot on the ballot through the write-in process in the primary.
Earned, I guess he earned his spot on a street corner, too, because he was out, had a big sign and everything, and I think you posted something.
Well, I didn't post. Somebody else posted.
About and then street
some,
signs.
Some Democrats weighed in, and then the conversation turned to yard signs, which a lot of experienced campaign workers are pretty down on their effectiveness. Mm-hmm. You got to give some credit to Sam Nagy. You know, he tried to run for mayor as a Republican and did not gather enough signatures, so then he switched to running for council. Got the small number of votes he needed to get on the ballot to try and run as a Republican on the West Side, which is a pretty uphill battle. But I think he learned his lesson from his signature efforts. He was over on the West Side trying to gather Republican signatures, which was a pretty tall order. But now he's holding signs standing on corners in Midtown, where at least he could appeal to a few more Republican voters.
So what is Ed Ackerley's path to victory, Joe and Dylan?
Well, I mean, I think that Prop 205 turnout could play a role in, you know, him bringing in Republicans who are going to, you know, generally speaking, are sitting out this particular cycle.
If he has any path, I think it will be somewhat related to how turnout is affected by that initiative being on the ballot. There are an awful lot of folks out there who, for one reason or another, are tying Romero's candidacy to that effort, even though she's been pretty much vehemently against the initiative. And that gives Ed Ackerley, as an independent, a Democrat who gave up his party membership to run for mayor, a little bit of an opening in what is a really a long, difficult row for him to hoe.
And that former Democrat now is, you know, cultivating Republicans to vote for him. He's on the campaign trail actively seeking support for them. I was at a meeting last week where he was asking the Pima County Republican Club for their support. So, I mean, that's, you know, some real in the weeds kind of, you know, stumping for votes.
Will the Republican Party put up some ads and on behalf of him? Is that possible?
You know, I think county parties have very limited budgets at the end of the day to really put any money behind things. When you see county parties spending money, it's usually, you know, because they got money from state party.
You think Ed will, does Ed have any money to, how's his campaign looking money-wise?
Small by comparison.
Small budget.
Yeah.
Small, okay. Very small by comparison. Well, if some of the folks who write larger checks to political candidates start to get the sense that he's got a chance, he might pick up some. There might be a, you know, an independent expenditure committee, one of those outside committees that doesn't have to report quite so much. That something might get going behind him.
I mean, that's the only way it would work as an IE. I mean, even big name donations are limited to 500 to Ed. So only way that he could really kind of close that gap would be through an IE working on his benefit, where those checks are rather unlimited.
There is a very competitive race, isn't there, with Nikki Lee and former TUSD superintendent, but president of the board, Mike Hicks. How do you see that shaping up, Joe?
Well,
Ferguson?
I mean, that's, I mean, we still have
again,
a
that's ward what?
Ward four.
Ward four.
Ward four, okay, on the right. Southeast side.
Okay.
With, Shirley Scott's former seat.
There you go.
The seat that she is giving up.
Isn't that a fairly competitive district?
No, it actually would, you know, benefit Republicans. Republicans have won that ward in terms of the ward itself several times now, but the reality is it's a citywide election, so Democrats are still going to have the advantage when it comes to the polling place, and the people who are likely to vote for Rahina are going to be likely to vote for Nikki Lee.
There is that. I mean, Mike Hicks has run and won several times in what are elections that cover most of the city.
Fair enough.
In TUSD races. Of course, those aren't head-to-head partisan races, even though everybody pretty much knows what political party they are. You have crowded school board races with, you know, 10 or 11 people on the ballot. And so that's much more a factor of name recognition than a you know, citywide sort of party split.
But just to push back, you know, how long ago was it that Mike Hicks won that first seat and wasn't an incumbent asking for re-election?
Yeah.
It's been quite some time in terms of the political landscape and how it's changed for Republican candidates.
He's got a chance. I don't know if it is, you know, a highly competitive race. If any of the Republican candidates who are running this time around have an opportunity, it would be Mike Hicks.
But we're not seeing that reflected in fundraising.
No. And looking at, you know, some of those, the earliest of campaign filings, we had Mike Hicks raising $800 and Nikki Lee raising $15,000, $16,000. It was an order of magnitude more support when it comes to people writing those checks.
Will the Green Party be on the ballot?
Yes. There is a...
In each of the races?
Yeah, in all of them
really?
This time around. Each of the Green Party candidates earned their way to the ballot through the write-in process. They had a very funky path this time around because they had to sue the city because of what they ended up showing that the court was a mistake made by the city clerk as to whether they were able to actually go out and get petitions to get themselves on. But so then, you know, the number of write-in votes that most of these people needed to get on the ballot were tiny. Most of them needed two. I think one of them needed three votes.
He got six.
He tripled the number. And the mayoral candidate for the Green Party, Mike Cease, needed to get 18 write-in votes. He did flip that number. He got 81. You know, do these folks have a realistic chance of being elected? I would say no. But, you know, they got themselves on the ballot and, you know, they can play their role in the conversation.
All right. In other political news, we say goodbye to F.N. Rodriguez after the 2020 election. She's been just an institution in this town for almost 30 years, Joe.
Yeah, she's surprised a lot of us yesterday by the announcement. So she will count ballots for and verify signatures for, you know, people who are going to run to take her seat.
That's a good point.
All right, what's coming up in the Star, Joe? Anything you'd like to promo?
Yeah, we've got two of my colleagues have worked for a while on dating back where the geographic center of the city of Tucson is. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a great read, but I strongly encourage people to go online and look at it this weekend. I think it's going to be a really interesting story to view online.
Okay, and Dylan, anything you'd like to point out?
Yeah, coming up next week, there is a major international journalism effort called Covering Climate Now. And it's going to be everyone from us at TucsonSentinel.com writing about the current and potential impacts of climate change here in southern Arizona I think right now there are like 270 different journalism organizations all around the world. You know, the biggies here in the United States, The Guardian, pretty much everybody is playing a role in this. And so look for some interesting, thought-provoking, and maybe controversial stuff coming next week.
TucsonSentinel.com. Thank you very much, Dylan. And Joe, thanks a lot. Guys, have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Matt Russell, coming up next, Weekend Watch.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Buckmaster Show
listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA's Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Stir it up, baby. It's Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, Inside Tucson Business Food and Beverage columnist, presented by Southwest New Mexico. Silver City and Grant County. Bob put up the temperature a few minutes ago in Silver City. Oh, there it is. 82 degrees. How do you beat that? 3-hour trip over to Silver City. You're going to cool off in that mile-high elevation altitude. Great places to stay. So many recreation opportunities. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, award-winning Tucson publicist, general foodie beyond recognition, meaning he's a five-star foodie, Matt Russell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how are you, Bill?
Hey, it's Bear Down Friday, man. We got a big football game with Texas Tech.
It absolutely is, and of course, the epic pregame party is so big it has to start a full day before the game. So starting at 4 o'clock tonight in Main Gate Square, it is Bear Down Friday. This is the pregame pep rally to get everybody excited for the big game. The Pride of Arizona marching band, Wilbur, Wilma, cheerleaders, coaches, the entire crew. And I think it's a great opportunity to get Main Gate Square's newest restaurant on your list, the Blind Pig. This is a barbecue joint that serves up all kinds of righteous barbecue along with some tacos and sandwiches. It's Bear Down Friday today.
Hey, we talked a little bit about Sonoran Restaurant Week last week. What's the update?
Yeah, so there's only 3 days left, Bill, to take advantage of all these great specials happening across town. 35 restaurants are participating. Each of them has assembled a three-course meal priced at either $25 or $35 per person with options that are limitless. You can go to SonoranRestaurantWeek.com to kind of plan your weekend dining strategy. Again, it is now through Sunday.
Heard there's a battle of the beers going on at Hotel Congress.
Absolutely, sir. Tucson's local beer community continues to thrive. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock is the annual celebration of the craft, the Born and Brewed Beer Battle, as you said, at Hotel Congress. Nearly 20 of our local brewers are going to be going head-to-head, get it, head-to-head, beer, Bill, to see who has the best set. There's going to be People's Choice Awards, Judge's Choice Awards, some great cuisine. I'm going to be the MC. HotelCongress.com to grab your tickets. Bill, this event will sell out, so hurry up.
Inside Tucson Business Column.
Yes, the Ronald McDonald House Charities House Party is on September the 20th. And a special cocktail will make its debut that evening. It's called, are you ready? The McRussell. And the story behind my namesake cocktail is in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Have a great weekend. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. On behalf of Bob Dio, I'm Bill Buckmaster. And everybody here at Bustos Media Tucson, have a great weekend.